Also Stubble Park, Hitler's Uranium Engine. Inglourious Bastard is a 2009 war film starring Brad Pitt and directed by Quentin Tarantino. Its title was inspired by director Enzo Castellari's 1978 war film, The Inglourious Bastards. It tells the story of plots to assassinate Nazi Germany's political leadership. In the spring of 1944, a team of Jewish American soldiers is recruited in the Mediterranean for a mission to get behind enemy lines and pursue Nazi foes. As noted by a 2009 newsgroup report, the real-life Jewish revenge squads killed 1,500 high-ranking Nazis, starting in 1944, and their methods were chilling. Some were in the brigade, a unit set up by Prime Minister Winston Churchill in 1944, made up of more than 6,000 volunteers. He said, "It seems to me indeed appropriate that a special unit of the race which has suffered indescribable treatment from the Nazis should be represented in a distinct formation among the forces gathered for their final overthrow." In World War II, author Ian Fleming was an agent of the British Red Indians, 30 Assault Unit, assigned to capture and evaluate technical intelligence on German forces. In addition, Fleming nearly had a showdown with Aleister Crowley. Perhaps Fleming based some of his famous spy novels Scoundrels on that controversy. During World War II, Ian Fleming and others proposed a disinformation plot in which Crowley would have helped an MI5 agent supply Nazi official Rudolf Hess with faked horoscopes. They could then pass along false information about an alleged pro-German circle in Britain. The government abandoned this plan when Hess flew to Scotland, crashing his plane on the moors near Eaglesham, and was captured. Fleming then suggested using Crowley as an interrogator to determine the influence of astrology on other Nazi leaders, but his superiors rejected this plan. Wikipedia.org. When asked why American troops weren't first to enter Berlin in 1945, General Dwight D. Eisenhower usually answered that they were looking for Adolf Hitler in his southern redoubt stronghold. Yet, talk that the German program couldn't power up its nuclear reactor was not unfounded. The U.S. Army's Alsos mission led by Colonel Boris Pasch commenced in 1943. It was named with the Greek term for an amusement park or sacred grove in honor of General Leslie Groves, head of the Manhattan Project. The Alsos search of Nazi military sites confirmed that Germany did not turn out an atomic bomb. At the end of World War II, the Anglo-American allies rounded up Adolf Hitler's top nuclear scientists and secretly transferred them to an English country house in Cambridge known as Farm Hall. In what was called Operation Epsilon, the German scientists remained under house arrest for 6 months, where their conversations were recorded, transcribed, and translated. From those recordings, we learned that Hitler was not particularly interested in developing an atomic bomb. Instead, the Nazis were secretly working on a uranium engine or super reactor for military purposes. I would say that I was absolutely convinced of the possibility of our making a uranium engine, but I never thought we would make a bomb, and at the bottom of my heart I was really glad that it was to be an engine and not a bomb. Werner Heisenberg. The 2000 Tony Award-winning play Copenhagen is Michael Frayn's view of the puzzling meeting between the famous physicists Werner Heisenberg, a German, and Niels Bohr, a Dane, in Nazi-occupied Denmark during the war. Because Heisenberg, a founder of quantum theory who headed the Reich nuclear research team, was not an admirer of Hitler, a security screen or safeguard had to be set up. Heisenberg's group was required to produce mathematical formulas and small working models of the proposed uranium engine. Then, all construction work was transferred to loyal Nazi, Abraham Esau, the head of the German Bureau of Standards that supervised the building of large-scale atomic projects under Albert Speer. Esau was also in charge of Reich uranium and heavy water, deuterium. The Allies did not make known the large-scale nuclear military designs of Esau in detail. Leader of the Nazi Bell Project Walther Gerlach, see page 511, replaced Esau in 1943. The Research Bureau of the Reich Post Office concealed branches of secret Nazi atomic experimentation. Perhaps only 10% of the Farm Hall conversations were released in manuscript form, Some of the German transcriptions are not available in the British or American files and are apparently lost. But according to the recordings, the German scientists seemed to be more interested in high-energy rays than atomic explosions. At one point they discussed the possibility of farm hall being bugged with microphones. Before the war's end, a disturbing story emerged that took stock of the German redoubt as an underground stronghold connected by rail to Fortress Europe. Even Eisenhower's headquarters took it very seriously. The redoubt idea produced in the mindset of the Allied command the sense that if and when Hitler was found it would be in the south. On the eve of the Normandy invasion, an Allied command wartime report concluded that it seems reasonably certain that some of the most important ministries and personalities of the Nazi regime are already established in the redoubt area. Goering, Himmler, Hitler are said to be in the process of withdrawing to their respective personal mountain strongholds. As the war worsened, the magic child became the world's most disliked person. But what disturbed him even more were the cruel promises the guards made to him on nearly all occasions. They said the magic child would finally be allowed to go free. At a given time, when his unconscious psyche and fierce conditioning had subjugated every cowardly opposition, the bunker doors would be unlocked and flung wide open. He would then be absolutely free to leave his solitary confinement. "Don't be stupid," a voice around him often argued. "Of course you'll walk out the door. She's waiting for you in Paris." But he knew that nobody was waiting for him on the outside. He also knew what his liberty would cost the rest of the world. The ultimate blitzkrieg, binary fission attacks would take place throughout Britain, Europe, and Russia the day he crossed the threshold of the bunker door. The guards cautioned him in jest. This was his war. What was binary fission? He wasn't sure exactly. It would be terrible, he was certain of that. But could he resist the stubborn urge to seek his own freedom? Or would selfish, physical hunger gain mastery of his soul? The magic child tried to ignore the conflict of emotions in his mind. Did his subliminal willpower really cause more misery than anyone who ever lived? Soon, he would have a chance to get his name back, by staying right where he was. In the embittered end, the magic child hesitated and would not struggle, betraying the spiteful promise of an ultimate blitzkrieg. When the guards discerned he was taking far too long to stagger out the door, they were smitten with alarm and apprehension. But when a control fuel pipe was sabotaged shortly afterward, they realized their uranium engine now could not power up, and the war would be lost. The anger was beyond words. Instead of rising up, the magic child favored suicide, and wished to die in a bunker. Consequently, a backup plan directly went into action. In place of a damaged control duct, a U.S. destroyer would be manipulated, evasively. Even though the escort ship's nuclear surge would not send out as much energy as required to sustain a chain reaction, the floating atomic barge was here on a clear mission to conquer. Its convoy ruled the sea and drove back all refusals to go along with it. An American display of nuclear governance in the liberated seaport would signify the end of the German war effort. In their brutal resentment, the guards pledged their hostage a fate far worse than dying, binary fission, fully awake. They would force the magic child to taste the death ray, the neutron beam invented by James Chadwick in the 1930s. When a neutron source collides with a fissile uranium target, a nuclear reaction occurs, which can be controlled to produce energy. The guards made known that their bunker was concealed within a secure planned infrastructure. No legitimate government could construct such a shelter because it was built by forced labor. 10 million slaves died to keep a secret. In a stronghold cleft of the earth, below wire frame elevators, behind solid metal doors, there he sits, in the atom smasher of the Third Reich. Who is he? The guinea pig of a final experiment. A menacing voice explained with aloofness, the entire universe has expanded from a primordial hot and dense initial condition. Everything must have been closer together in the past. All the mass of the universe was packed into a single point, a primeval atom or singularity, when time and space came into existence. Mass, energy, and life have been regarded as aspects of God since ancient times, the harsh voice declared. But how can life ever survive the initial conditions of such a hot and dense fireball? That seems impossible. Yet indeed, on the other hand, petrol doesn't outlast chemical combustion, does it? But without petrol, combustion would not be achievable. So you see, we don't really care if life can endure the primordial spark. We're only concerned that life is there as an ingredient in the initial conditions. The guards jeered at the magic child with vulgar abandon. They said they were going to reproduce a nuclear process in the first moment of universe creation. For a very brief instant, a small area of the bunker would become hotter than a stellar plasma. We're going to open a bridge, the unforgiving voice said. A vortex to reshape the quantum field of space and time. What experiment is this? Controlled fission. The splitting of the atom, in your own flesh. Not to kill you, but to burn a small hole in a part of your body you could do without. Doctor keeps you alive, a white-robed medical specialist coldly remarked. He then calibrated a syringe with an injection of fissile isotopes designed to flow into the nuclei of human reproductive cells. Zero rest mass, in your body, the looming voice continued. We're going to drive a tiny part of your being a fraction of a second into the past, like a time-reversed electron. And we believe your mind will follow. Your genetic information, a bimolecular strain, shall be relayed to what went before it, and conceivably, to the very dawn of time. Who knows? In that fleeting whirlpool, your lone thought could be condemnation's final realization, bounded by a seamless loop, hotter than a solar furnace. As you understand, the heartless voice broke off. People the world over pray that you burn in hell forever. That wish shall be answered today. Because you failed your supreme warfare duty, now you'll sit in the pathway of binary fission and remain a living inferno of unspeakable burning without beginning or end. The Guns of Navarone is a 1961 film based on a World War II novel by Alastair MacLean, starring Gregory Peck, David Niven, Irene Papas, and Anthony Quinn. It depicts the efforts of an Allied commando team to enter an impregnable Nazi fortress in occupied Greek territory and destroy a massive German gun emplacement that commands a key sea channel. In actual fact, above and across a tidy street in Athens called Navarinu, corners of Lycabettus hilltop are hollow inside and contain cannons and mounted guns that command the waterway of the largest passenger port in Europe. German architects built a number of military bunkers, passages, and rooms inside that raised mass of earth before the war. Escape to Athena is a 1979 war film directed by George Cosmatos, starring Roger Moore, Telly Savalas, Claudia Cardinale, and David Niven. It portrays the adventure of Greek partisans who make off with art treasures from the Nazis, and as a result wipe out a stronghold of V-2 missiles, amassed by garrison actor Alkis Panagiotidis in German-occupied Greece, capable of stopping an Allied invasion. Yet, the most atrocious secret weapon of the redoubt fortress gossip was said to be a type of death ray. Perhaps it is garishly portrayed in Goldfinger, a 1964 movie with Sean Connery from Ian Fleming's 007 spy novel. True to form, secret agent James Bond is strapped to a table under a searing laser, which slowly begins to slice the table in half. Strong controlled fission beams may release radiation and intense heat that can vaporize elements, similar to an industrial laser. But nuclear particle collisions may also fleetingly create microscopic black holes and momentarily distort the quantum structure of space and time. A fireball created in a U.S. particle accelerator has the characteristics of a black hole, a physicist has said. It was generated at the Relativistic Heavy Ion Collider, RHIC, in New York, U.S., which smashes beams of gold nuclei together at near light speeds. Haradiunastas says his calculations show that the core of the fireball has a striking similarity to a black hole. Lab fireball may be black hole, BBC News, March 17, 2005. Nearly all of the dock workers were told that wooden cases on the wharf with Mel marked on them contained honey, and that laborers dressed in beekeeper suits were preparing beehive products for the fleet. In the spring of 1945, Only a few sailors recognized that full-body suits, gloves, and face shields protected physicists from radioactivity in a floating atomic reactor. Camouflaging the ship's glowing discharge was rather more difficult, but still within the acceptable limits of an atmospheric reflection. The escort ship's nuclear energy lined up with its destination duct just as the attempted seaport mutiny began. A rainbow thunderstorm roared. Siren devices wailed out warning sounds. Power surges and spikes occurred throughout the Mediterranean metropolis, releasing electrical charges at several points in the power lines. "Time was distorted," cried the Greek lyrics of a resistance ballad. Allied aircraft watched from the sky for signs below of surrender. It came at last when a water outflow was quickly spotted over 12 kilometers away. A conduit hydrant had split open, flooding part of a recreational area's boulevard. The assault units arrived within minutes. Some of the brigade dashed up through the subway. Others got there with military vehicles. Near the boulevard was an abandoned German motor van, blocking the entrance of a well-designed tenement. Long black hoses zigzagged from an outlet panel on the side of the van to gas pipe sockets in the pavement. The van was a mobile mechanism to maneuver a neutron source through an accelerator's channel and divert it to its target assembly. The alleyway was swamped with slippery streams of lubricants. The assault units searched for more German technical machinery. But the task forces arrived first. The Gestapo mole was waiting for them at the driveway of the bunker when the revenge squads got there. The decoy bunker complex had been completely evacuated. There were no signs of life inside except in the last resting place. Visionaries imagine human travel at light speed in terms of a whole, intact person. But the Nazis did not. They crudely annihilated a human guinea pig in a concrete-encased reactor. Some particles did reach light speed. The rest of the confused mass was fully awake, still alive, but not for long. Fighters jumped down brickwork stairwells to the sunken internal chamber. They were met with a gruesome spectacle when they discovered the human target assembly. Dire pursuit of criminal organ trafficking at last uncovered the shocking traces of a vicious biological experiment. The genital member was scorched. A lonely wooden chair was splintered with a hole. See page 394. The Gestapo mole quickly pulled a coil from the back of the victim's collar and flung him over a slippery mattress. He said the captive was in a coma and beyond hope. The mole then fired his handgun. What began as a revenge mission ended as a mercy killing. "We got the real one," an assault unit negotiator yelled into his radio communication microphone at the top of his voice. "The soldier is dead. He was shot in the head. He was sick. Sick unto death like a brain in a vat." Feet of clay were used to psychologically torture the magic child, who was forced to remain perfectly still and motionless. A ball of clay or soil had been pasted around the foot of his chair. A shift of the chair would cause the clay lump to crumble and break into smaller fragments. Guards could then measure the slightest movements that took place when they were not present, and correspondingly discipline their prisoner. It looked as if the guards had by some means produced a pulsed spark of atomic lightning, in high peak power. The heat and wavelength of the loose fireball diverged at an angle. The fireball's broad frequencies did not appear to emit enough energy to chemically transform substances by simple thermal transfer. But its focal core gave off the burst of a cutting machine. Germany's discovery of nuclear fission in 1938 fulfilled one of alchemy's greatest goals, the transmutation of elements. New forms of matter could be created out of others. It marked a turning point for magical orders that sought to transform the elements. In a Nazi decoy bunker, a living soul became dense, primordial matter. An atomic trace of plutonium corrosive, unlawful to possess, was created in a human breeder reactor. Identification photos were taken. According to the Gestapo mole settlement, the scorched body would be moved at once to Germany and be retrieved by Russians in the Chancellery ruins of Berlin. The extra precautions disposed of in a garden and additionally cremated with gasoline would prevent rebellion among Third Reich radicals and lock up the swift lying down of arms. Within a few days, large crowds would be celebrating in Europe. The news reports would be brief but quite exact. The ailing leader had spent nearly all of his period of influence in a cavernous bunker on the map, below Berlin, where he directed lightning war tactics under the most harsh conditions. When his furious undertakings failed, he decided to finish his life in his dugout headquarters. After the war, the decommissioned atomic escort ship would go to the Greek Navy to evoke an enduring moment of the past, for old time's sake. Not surprisingly, unreliable troop rumors would go on retelling of transportation in time, and servicemen's limbs implanted in sections of the wall. However, the missing body part reports would never fully oblige an official answer. That anomaly, in common with the scorched genital member, would be seen improper as a juvenile joke implied in pubs or beer halls. Please don't lose your balls down in the bunker. Steve Gibbons Band, Down in the Bunker, 1978. It is suspected that Hitler's double, a chancellery cook, died from a gun blast to the head in the Führer's Berlin bunker on April 30, 1945. There were no reported spectators to that shooting. Rumors hint that an SS bodyguard pulled the trigger. Bunker personnel that heard the pistol believed that Hitler had shot himself. But the bloodstains found on the couch allegedly did not match his known blood group. As Russian tanks in the north were trouncing Berlin, a counteroffensive took shape in the southern environs of the city. An armed forces column was established in the southern suburbs of Berlin, for important prisoners to be moved. That all-out drive was not to stop the Soviet troops, but for the body of the magic child to be transported into Berlin from a southern lookout and be cremated in the Chancellery Garden. Meanwhile, the body of the look-alike cook was watchfully laid out before a drained water tank and posed with scattered debris and pareidolic props to convincingly duplicate the redoubt bunker scene. Authentic photos of the real Adolf Hitler's corpse were dispatched for Nazis in custody and on trial to allude to as the final facts without failing lie detector tests. But since they remarkably resembled the Berlin fake double, Allied investigators were expected to be wary of the photos. Even so, the bunker guards made a serious miscalculation. They should have kicked that mattress across the floor. They should have kicked it. But why dirty their boots with radioactive oxide? Decades later, matching computer graphics showed that details of the Athens bunker floor and close-ups of the Berlin double corresponded, although they were almost 2,000 kilometers apart. The similarities could not have been coincidental, but were probably due to a deliberate suicide mock-up. As the Third Reich buckled in the spring of 1945, the sweeping caves of the taboo southern redoubt were ransacked of arms and equipment. Like the Maginot Line, bombproof units that were to survive and reorganize Nazism became fetid ditches of rubbish and discarded articles. The Germans ravaged the bunkers before they retreated. Red Indian assault units seized war machinery and technical equipment. Some cavern access points were deliberately damaged with explosives so the entrances could not be located. Many were sealed shut. In hindsight, a hollow slope protected by ancient myths and buried pillars may have been a natural choice for pompous German leaders wanting to conceal their redoubt fortress and conduct secret atomic research in the land of Democritus. The Führer announced his official arrival to Nazi-occupied Greece in 1941. Yet, if 20th century technology did produce an atomic fireball to part the edge of space and time, and send life's gene pool into a vortex, was it really such a well-preserved secret? The marble quarries of Athens have been associated with mysterious activity since ancient times. The doctrine of purgatory over the centuries depicts it as a mountain stronghold in the south, considered a way of purification. The nethermost cavities of Hades are beneath a mountain called Lucid by the Wolves, the unseen place of scorpions. It is a hideaway of the lost, as Dante's Inferno, holding its prisoners beyond the seven gates and the sea below all seas, reaching under Jerusalem. The legend of the uranium engine is a furnace of Greek atomism that rises up from the underworld known as the Abyss. It is where primordial forces sought by the ancients build the flames. Splitting Democritus' atom, the dark spaces between stars are set on fire, and from Leucippus' broken star new forms of matter are created. Grim is the hollow of remorse in the cavernous cauldron of Purgatory Hill. Beneath that tarnished bronze door is a sight almost too terrible for humans. There, kings, ministers, and soldiers selfishly contend with the atom's strongest force, tearing at the very fabric of space and time, and reworking chaste nature into other realities. In that dreadful inferno, one sits forever, whose blinking of an eye brought death to thousands. Well, I stand up next to a mountain. And I chop it down with the edge of my hand. Well, I pick up all the pieces and make an island. Might even raise a little sand. Jimi Hendrix, Voodoo Child, 1968.